four, three, two.
So good afternoon and welcome. This is the special virtual commission meeting of August 19th, 2020 to discuss first a possible amendment to the emergency order regarding short-term rentals to conform with the recent county revision. Two, the city's response, if any, to the decision by the Miami-Dade County Public Schools to start the year with online teaching only. And three, authority to execute interlocal agreement with Miami-Dade County for CARES Act distribution. Those are the three items on the agenda. Due to the public health emergency caused by COVID-19 and as authorized by Governor DeSantis's Executive Order 2069 is extended, today's special city commission meeting is being held virtually with elected officials and city staff participating via Zoom. To participate or provide comments during this special virtual commission meeting, here's how you do it. So you can join on Zoom, which is on zoom.us, and or you can go by telephone through any of these two numbers, 1-301-715-8592, or toll-free 877-853-5257. That's 877-853-5257. There is a webinar ID number you need, and that is 837-159-9663#. I'm going to say that again because I'm old and it's little. 837-159-9663#. So if you're a public and you want to, if we're going to allow people to speak at all on this, the way you do it is you raise your hand icon in the Zoom app. There's a raise hand icon. You hit that, or you press *9 on the telephone, and that is the equivalent of raising your hand. Okay, with that, let's start a meeting. And PJ, if you don't mind, put up a flag. And I would ask you, PJ, the voice of Oz, to lead us in the pledge.
All right. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, pretty close. All right, let's get to Mr. Clerk. Let's go with the announcements.
We have no announcements, sir. All's good. We're ready to go.
Okay, so do we have a first item you can pull up?
They're all, whatever the manager wants to do, it's a discussion item. It's only one. So if you want to, whichever one.
Yeah, let's go. Items, right. So Jimmy,
Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, let's take
right, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, good afternoon. And sorry to have interrupted our August break, but there were a few developments during the course of the last few weeks that I thought merited hopefully what will be a quick and brief discussion today and possible action. In all cases, seeking your input and one item that needs to be voted on with respect to the interlocal agreement. Three quick points of personal privilege, however. Number one, I want to wish a happy birthday to my chief of staff, Marsha Montserrat. Today's her birthday. Number two, happy birthday to my mother, in case she's watching today. And happy anniversary to Dory, 31 years. All right. So I doubt she's watching, though. She's working. But I'll take them in the order that they're listed in the discussion. The first one is, as you remember, the last time we met at the end of July, our order currently prohibits all short-term rentals in the city. The county order at that time as well had a minimum one-month rental requirement. You could not rent for less than a month at a time, which essentially precluded most short-term rentals anyway. On August 5th, however, about 2 weeks ago today, Mayor Jimenez issued an order where he created an exception to the 30-day rule for short-term rentals in buildings that are either condominiums or hotels, and allowing them to operate on less than a monthly basis, meaning they could even rent on a nightly basis. Needless to say, that change was obviously significant enough that I know many of you, as well as I know I did, received a lot of outreach from folks who own short-term rentals in condos and hotels. In fact, the overwhelming majority of the legal short-term rentals on Miami Beach are in either condo hotel buildings. suddenly started reaching out to us, because that was obviously a change and now opened up their market for them and wanted to be able to follow the county rule with respect to now being able to do less than monthly rentals, and wanted us to go in that direction. And so I wanted to bring this to you all here. As I said, I've circulated the numbers earlier. I believe approximately 93% of our legal short-term rentals are in condo and hotel buildings. I think the logic that Mary made was that those buildings had some level of supervision, whether in a hotel or in a condominium, some sort of a secured entrance, whatever. It wasn't stated in his order, but presumably that's what went into that logic. And so, we do know that there are a lot of folks who have invested in legal short-term rentals, and some who depend on it for income and whatnot. And so in an effort to obviously be sensitive to that, I bring this item with a recommendation that we go with that exception, with a difference, though, my concern being that in the county order, the occupancy limit, they can have an occupancy of as many as 10 people in a short-term rental. And knowing that we see, because of the nature of Miami Beach, we often are some of our biggest problems with short-term rentals have been the party houses, a lot of people in a place partying and whatnot. I would recommend that if we go down this route, then that we have a limit of 4 people, and then maybe up to 6 if it's a family. So that if there's a family with 4 kids or something, much like we do with the restaurant tables, where it's the maximum capacity of 4 unrelated people, or 6 if they're a family. So, and also to add that if we find that a particular unit violates that rule, to then, by keeping them on a short lease, give me the authorization to, pull their BTR for the pendency of the emergency order, to make it clear that while we want to let them operate, they need to operate and need to be careful in terms of managing their short-term rental units. And that would be my recommendation to enable these folks to take advantage of the investments they've made and operate their business. Hotels are obviously open, and that's been one of the complaints is, if hotels are open, why can't we? Now the county order has allowed that to happen, and I would recommend doing so, but with the precautions that I in terms of occupancy and the ability to pull the BTR if they violate that occupancy limit.
Okay, so here's how we're going to approach this. I have a question, and I'll invite my colleagues. Let's go through a period of where we can ask Jimmy questions about the policy he's recommending. Then I see there are a few people who look like they want to speak. We'll take them, and then we'll come back and talk with each other about it. Jimmy, why don't you explain, or have if it's Hernan or whomever, explain what the circumstances were, because we had a more stringent rule than the county. And I know that there had been some issues with regard to some of these STRs. So I don't know whether it's you or Hernan want to tell us sort of what gave rise, so that we know if we decide to take your recommendation or some form of your recommendation, what it is we're receiving from.
If you recall, when the county and the city began to open up hotels in early June, if I recall, we also opened up, I think, short-term rentals. But it was I think toward the end of June and July when we began to see the spikes again. We also witnessed in our city some very poor behavior at short-term rentals. We had some issues. I remember the Alexander, some serious issues inside where in short-term rental units, fights in the lobby, all kinds of things. And Hernan can go to some more detail, and police, actually. We had an issue with an illegal short-term rental up in North Beach on South Shore. But again, similar type of too many people, party and whatnot. And so when the county then went to the one-month rule, the problem with that was it's very hard to – one of the challenges with short-term rentals, and Hernan can tell you, is people claim, well, I'm here only for I'm here for a month. They'll lie and say they're here for a month on a month contract. They do that now when people say, well, they're not – this is not a rental. These are my cousins from Albuquerque who are staying here this week. So we thought from an enforcement perspective it made sense to just say – no rentals. And candidly, the impact was the same, because we didn't really get few, if any, complaints from the short-term rental owners until Mayor Jimenez created the exception to the one-month rule. That one-month rule essentially was like shutting most short-term rentals down. But now that he's opened them up, now we're getting the owners saying, why can't we do the same thing? Okay. I don't know if Hernan wants to add anything to that.
No, Jimmy, you're right. So we've had issues at licensed short-term rentals, and, you know, it's been both. It's been at condo hotels, apartment buildings. And the biggest leverage we've had is under the emergency order is that, of course, like our ordinance, you vacate these immediately. But whether they're licensed or illegal, unlicensed short-term rentals, under the emergency order, then they're vacated and they're stopped immediately. Ultimately, you know, even looking at, because I know the next question might be, well, what is the caseload versus whether we allow it or not? You know, a bad transient renter is a bad transient renter, and that can happen at an illegal short-term rental, or that can happen at a licensed BTR short-term rental, and that's what we've seen in the city.
Okay, so again, I'm going to come back to all the commissioners after the public has a few moments to speak. But if you have questions of Hernan or Jimmy, now would be a time before we go to the public. And I see Vice Mayor Samuelin, your hand is raised.
Thank you, Mayor. Jimmy, three questions. First, you mentioned the county changed this approximately 2 weeks ago. Anecdotally, do we have any feedback? Have they had problems, reports? Is it going smoothly? What could you share from what you've heard from the county?
I have not heard anything from that level. I'm not aware of any problems that have arisen, but I've not reached out to anyone over there. You know, we are probably one of the stronger short-term rental markets in Dade County, probably more robust than most, but I'm not aware.
Okay. Second, in terms of enforcement, and you touched on this, but could you expand a little bit on how would we approach enforcement if we accept your recommendation? How do we make sure there's not 12 people in the room? How do we make sure that we don't have some of the issues which we were trying to address previously?
Well, obviously, historically, both code principally, but even police have been part of the enforcement effort with short-term rentals. By virtue of the fact that these are going to be in condos and hotels, is to work with front desks, condo associations, to ask them to be very vigilant in reporting occupancy limitations, as well as, you know, just the other rules. I mean, you could still have four people and they could still violate a noise ordinance, so, which is often one of the ways we find illegal rentals is when people are having big parties and making a lot of noise. So we'll continue that level of enforcement, but hopefully the smaller number will enable residents who witness 10 people go into a room and things like that to reach out to us, and we'll sort of reach out, do some outreach to the various buildings to let them know that we really need them to help us in identifying and reporting violations.
Yep. You touched on my last point. That was about outreach. Could you just talk about, again, if we go down this path, how would we get the word out? How do we make sure folks know the new rules here?
Well, you know, obviously, in addition to all the communicating we do with our e-blasts and whatnot, code, as you probably see in most of my nightly reports, code is constantly doing outreach to restaurants, retail, and hotels. Just to look at compliance issues with the reopening guidelines. And I think part of what we would do here is I'd have Hernan with his staff visit the hotel, the buildings where we, because one of the good things is we know where these legal units are. And we could, and some of them are probably more heavily concentrated in 10 or 20 buildings, you know, places that have 20 or 30 of them. So I think we could do an in-person visit to a lot of these buildings, talk to the front desk, talk to the associations, and let them know we're allowing, you know, your owners in here to go back to hopefully making some money. But we need you all to be part of the enforcement process. And if we catch somebody, we'll pull their BTR. So let them know that it's in their interest to police what they're doing as well.
Thank you. That answers my questions.
Thank you. Commissioner Gangura.
Yes. Good afternoon. You asked some of the questions already, Vice Mayor Samuelin, that I had. I just wanted to be clear, Jimmy, we're not voting on this. This is something you're doing under your emergency power. You're just taking the pulse of the commission.
Yeah, I mean, it is an item that I guess I don't need a vote, but I thought, you know, one of the things we had talked about before we broke for August was that, you know, a major decision, and this, you know, is, I think, a significant change of direction was something I at least wanted to come back in a meeting and talk to you all about.
No, and I appreciate that. And you clarified this, but I'd also like to clarify it again directly, because some single family homeowners reached out and they seem to have some confusion that this we're somehow discussing legalizing short-term rentals. And that's not true. What we're actually doing is the units and condo hotels that previously were legal to short-term rent that have been prohibited during the pandemic, we're considering going back to the old status, but we're putting in more restrictions on occupancy. That's how I understand this. Is that correct?
That's correct. Nowhere in the city of Miami Beach is a short-term rental legal in a single-family home, so that they should not have to worry about that. And we have many parts of our city, even where we have multifamily buildings, where short-term rentals are not legal. There are, as I think that we identified, there are 1,949 legal short-term rentals in the city. Those are the only units we're talking about.
Counting.
What? Yeah, but who's counting? Right. Okay. According to the latest count, and about 83% of those are in either condo buildings or hotel buildings. Those are the units, the only units we're talking about.
Okay. Well, briefly, because I'm ready to hear from the public as well. If you're recommending this, I'm okay with this, with these occupancy restrictions, primarily because I think that these owners that bought these investments in buildings, knowing that they could rent them out, aren't living there. So their source of income has been clipped by this. So if there's a way for them to do it safely, and it sounds like there is, based on your answer to Vice Mayor Samuelin's questions, then I'd be okay with it.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Richardson.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Jimmy, for asking us for our input on this. A couple of questions. So I know you sent out the categories, the three different categories that add up to 1,949. So does your recommendation include the third category, apartment building, or is your recommendation only the first two categories?
No, it does not include apartment buildings, number one, because the county doesn't. So we can't be more lenient. We can only we can be stricter, but not more lenient. So he did not open up that door, so we can't go through that either. But the apartment buildings, under the logic that I think guided the county, which was that condo buildings and hotel buildings have a different type of structure, organization, some level of security and entrance. Apartment buildings, most if any, don't have that. So I would not be recommending that anyway.
Okay. Because I think some apartment buildings are different, but I know that we have some apartment buildings, like in South Beach, for example, but short-term rentals aren't even legal down here that are very large and have security, right?
Right.
And we have condo buildings that don't have any security, right? So this could be any condominium. This could be any condominium building, even small ones that don't have any security or any front desk, right?
Yeah, the county order did not make that a requirement. It talked about buildings that operate as a condo or as a hotel.
Right. Okay. And then in the condo hotel category, there's 667. And, just like I think everybody else, we're getting a lot of calls and emails and questions. And it's my understanding that some of those units are part of a hotel pool and some are not. So the ones that are part of a hotel pool may have more oversight, if you will, because they may have to check in and so forth. But your recommendation wouldn't draw a distinction between the ones that are in the pool and the ones that are not, right?
Right. They would not.
Okay.
Prior to these orders, there was no distinction in the legality of their operation. And the mayor, if it meant it's in his order, didn't draw a distinction either. So,
and then in your recommendation on the occupancy of four, but up to six as a family, have you thought about how we define family? Because, what if somebody has their grandparents, their parents, and their adult children? So if they're all adults, or were you intending it to be four adults or two adults, and the up to go from four to six would be two minor children? Or do you see a situation where they could be six adults in the room?
I guess in theory, if it was two parents, two adult children, like Mike, I have two adult children and grandma and grandpa, I would consider that a family. I didn't want to get into too much detail, but it's sort of like, you know, it is the rule that we'd have had, not just in the city, but countywide, of, you know, tables can have as many as six people if they're all family. So right. I didn't want to go into, trying to define all of it. And it's difficult, but I was trying to at least recognize that some people will come here with three or four kids, or they might travel with their parent, the grandparents. And I wanted to be a little more flexible as opposed to just saying only four. That was
right. Or the parents could come and bring an adult child and three cousins that are all adults. Or what if six adult cousins came? I'm sorry to be, sorry to belabor the point, but you know, we've had so many people play games with us on this issue of occupancy. That's why I'm asking the question, because I can see six adult cousins coming down and saying they're a family, and then they get to stay in one room. I mean, one of the things we're trying to do is, two things: maintain order in our city, and number two, maintain the lowest level of incubation of the infection, if you will. So six adults in a room that may not be living with each other back home. So that's why I asked the question. Well, that's all I have now, Mayor, and I'd be happy to talk about this more after. I'm anxious to hear from the public after all of the electeds have spoken.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Minor, somewhere.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Jimmy, for bringing this to for us to discuss today. And I'm in agreement and supportive of the easing of the restrictions. Just a couple of questions. When we talk about the sort of the revocation of the BTR, if there's a violation, what is our typical rule if there's a violation of the BTR? And I guess just to be clear, the revocation would be through the duration of the emergency orders, which I'm guessing will be potentially several more months. So what is our usual rule if there's a violation?
Well, you know, as Hernan mentioned when he spoke, the emergency power order under the pandemic does give us some additional authority. Normally, to revoke a BTR, you would have to go through the special master process, have probably more than just one violation kind of thing. So there would be a bit more due process under our code. But with the one thing the emergency orders have given us, not just with respect to short-term rentals, but with restaurants and other things, is the ability to quickly enforce, because obviously we're trying to deal with an emergency situation being the pandemic. And we can't wait for we can't wait for 3 months to get to a special master and go through that process. So it does circumvent that process to enable us to keep these on a short leash. So it is a much more expedited process than if we weren't in a pandemic.
Do you get a sense, I mean, is there a way for you to tell whether, when there are violations, whether these are operators who literally were sort of flaunting the rules, or whether it was a matter of they were trying to enforce it, but unfortunately they were duped? And I guess I'm bringing that up because I wonder if maybe a one warning and then a revocation, something like that. I'm just thinking out loud and just to hear your thoughts.
My guess is, and Hernan has a lot more experience in this than I do, but it's probably a mixed bag. I mean, there probably are owners of units who don't care and flout, you know, what the rules are, and they just want to rent them. And then there are others who are more absentee owners who have the property managed by somebody else and may not be aware of what's going on. And so it's probably a mixed bag.
Okay.
With respect to a warning, I mean, obviously, if the commission wanted to give one warning or one bite at the apple, and that would not be unreasonable. But again, I was trying to just have them on a short leash because obviously we want folks to be as careful and supervise this. We want them to know that we are taking a much more serious approach to this than we would because we are in a pandemic.
Okay. And the switching gears, the cleaning and the sanitizing of the rooms, that there's still orders that mandate that, correct?
Yeah, the whatever reopening guidelines apply to short-term rentals, which were part of the guidelines that also apply a lot of them to hotels, those that were adopted, couple of months back, still apply. Those are still in effect. All those kind of reopening guidelines, sanitization, whatever other requirements they are, that you can find on our website. Nothing that we're discussing today changes that in any way.
One last question. I took a look. I noticed that there are, of the BTRs that have been filed in 2020, a significant portion are short-term rental BTRs, and maybe that's historically true. I didn't go back and take a historical look, but there are quite a few. Any concerns about that there's going to be, by my count at least, and this was my own look, I didn't verify this with the staff, but it looked like at least applicant-wise about 10% new short-term rentals will be coming online. Any concerns about sort of during these emergency orders, new volume coming online?
To the extent that they're in condos and hotels, no, 10% would be another 100 or 200. It's probably not a material when you consider the number of units we have on the beach between hotels and legal short-term rentals.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Richardson, did you have more questions? Okay.
Sorry, I was just being bad. Sorry, I'll take the hand down.
Somebody has to, so we know the rest of us are good. Jimmy, I have a couple of quick questions about, so my understanding was the county's logic was that these are sort of not single family, and they're sort of like a hotel in a sense that there's some control over it from presumably whoever runs the condo. Is that, or the hotel condo, which is whatever it is?
Correct.
So, and a lot of this is trying to figure out not just what the good operators do, but what some of the bad operators do. We don't really, how are you able to enforce any of this without the assistance of whoever runs the buildings?
No, absolutely. Look, as you know, most of our code enforcement or code compliance, as we like to say, is based on complaints we receive. I mean, we do some proactive and even with, like, for example, short-term rentals, we proactively look at advertising of illegal short-term rentals. But in most cases, whether it's a noise ordinance or anything else, we're usually dependent upon, good neighbors or angry neighbors, as the case may be, or who are being bothered by proper behavior. So part of, when Commissioner Salmon asked about outreach, I think critical there is to, with the condo boards, with the front desk people, et cetera, to report when they're seeing, 8-10 people going into a unit, that we would be, and also, in our e-blasts and messages to the community to please, help us make sure that these short-term rentals are doing precisely what we're doing, which is nicely providing some income with groups of four or a family of six or something.
Let me just ask Hernan, what were the scenarios that we were seeing before we implemented these rules?
Well, let me just add to what Jimmy just said before we go there. Our first line of defense, of course, is all of these condo hotels that do have security and have check-in staff. We have no shortage of sources of complaints, whether it be neighbors or condo management staff. To Commissioner Miner's point, respectfully, I don't know that I would give another bite of the apple and make the first offense a warning, because that's 1,949 phone calls that you guys are going to get, depending on what that warning was for who, and you're not going to have that relief provided to that neighborhood or to that building. And so that presents a problem to us, because then they get a second bite at the apple. The first one's a warning, and then we take enforcement action. What we've been seeing before, and by the way, the leverage on the emergency order is, under a regular BTR situation, you'd have to hit the fifth offense violation, unless it's a first offense that's super egregious, like the party house. Of course, that's an unlicensed STR. Unless it's very egregious, then you'd have to wait for a fifth offense before you even start the BTR revocation process. The leverage under the emergency order is that you take the enforcement action immediately, provides relief to the neighborhood, and it's not appealable action. The scenarios we were seeing before, so the brawl that we had with police at the Alexander, that was a combination of both licensed short-term rentals that were in the hotel rental program and illegal unlicensed short-term rentals. So it was a combination of both. And yeah, Mr. Mayor, again, the first line of defense and the reports that we get are usually from neighbors and from front desk staff.
Okay. All right, so let's go to the public. I see we have nine folks who look like they want to speak. Ralph, you want to put the timer on 2 minutes for each, and let's go through them. And Ralph, you can call them and recognize them.
Yes, sir. So the first caller is Maria Delgado on behalf of Dr. Karp. Maria, you're on. Maria, if you could unmute yourself, please. PJ, let's go to the next caller then.
Yeah, and let me just say, for those of you who are here to talk about another issue, the other, either the CARES Act or the schools, we're going to talk about that next. This is only for the short-term rental issue on the agenda.
So the next caller has a phone number ending in 1967. Caller, please unmute yourself.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Your name, please.
Yeah, my name is Rick Sherman. I'm a licensed short-term rental owner in a condominium, just, you know, a unit that helps provide me income. I just wanted to just some observations. I'm in total agreement that the best use of enforcement against bad actors, and especially during a pandemic, would be the limitation of the amount of people who can actually come, because generally it's the same thing could happen in a hotel room where, you know, somebody books the hotel and then eight other people show up. And from my own experience, I don't rent for less than 5 days, which gets rid of any of the weekender type people for the partying. But for the purposes of the pandemic, I think you're the most logical choice that I think works the best is that a one-bedroom unit should not have more than four people in it, two people maybe who the parents who sleep in the bedroom, and possibly a couple kids on a sleeper sofa. I think that should be the limit. If it's a two-bedroom unit, then, of course, it might go up to eight. In terms of just observationally from when it comes to safety, I find that almost all the people who want to come to an individual condominium feel it's safer than actually going into a hotel where there's many more people coming and going. And so I've always felt that when it came to it seemed kind of a little bit arbitrary when the hotels were all open and we were all shut down. I think the key to making sure bad action doesn't happen is the limitation of the amount of people. So that part of this during this time and even going forward after the pandemic's over is probably one of the best enforcement mechanisms there are relative to bad behavior.
Thank you, sir.
So I hope, I appreciate that.
Got cut off there. The next caller is Ellie Ruimi.
Yes, hi. Thank you so much. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Commissioner, for taking this and doing this today. So my name is Ellie Ruimi. I'm also president of the Vacation Rental Owners Association. I also own some units, and I'm also a property manager for about 15 years. One thing, you know, I'm a hotel operator and a vacation rental operator. So the issue here is that my staff can't operate now in the condo hotels. For example, the Fontainebleau, the Trump, the Marinas Beach, you know, so we've had issues where basically our units, even though they're in a hotel, condo hotel, they cannot be rented. And I have the owner services telling me, oh, well, if you want to rent, join the hotel program. We were allowed to rent and you can rent, even though my unit is next door to a hotel room. So it didn't make much sense how they're allowed to rent and we couldn't. And so the hotel programs were taking advantage of this, trying to get owners to sign up for 3-year contracts, you know, to join their hotel program because hotels are allowed to rent. And it's strange because our units are still considered under the hotel motel license because they're a unit within the hotel. Same front desk, same security. And, we need to be able to rent to pay our property taxes, to pay our continue paying our condo fees. So it just wouldn't make sense that part of the building could continue making their payments and part can't. I do understand, and I agree with everything that's been said. As far as occupancy, I think that we should follow the occupancy limits of the hotel. So whatever the hotel or the condo association limits, there are occupancy limits already in place. I know in my condos, one bedrooms is four people, two bedrooms is six people. So there are already existing occupancy limitations. And one of the things that I've done is I moved my guests during this restriction. I've rented some of my units yearly, resulting to tenants that come in for a one-year contract. And then because they can't be evicted, they are just squatting in the unit.
Thank you, sir. The time is up. Next caller is Fernando Ostalaza.
Hello, guys. Good afternoon, gentlemen. My name is Fernando Stolaza. I am the owner of 5 properties in Miami Beach and manage over 50. And I have 7 employees living in Miami Beach working under my management. I've been doing this for 15 years in Miami Beach. I don't want to put an emphasis now on the idea of working in the same building like hotels, because you already know that. What I want to mention is that in these buildings, like the Mondrian, the Fontainebleau, the Casablanca, the Setai, and so many others, including the Alexander, we, the association, are the responsibles to maintain our buildings, not the hotel operators. We, the owners, are the ones who pay security to enforce our mask. Masks in our common areas, to enforce maximum occupancy and rules and regulations in our buildings, not the hotel operator. We, the owners, are the one who put sanitizing gel in our lobbies, in our elevators, not the hotels. I want to also point that 40% of the tourist destination in Miami Beach that is from Latin America. These families coming to our short-term rentals because they want kitchens. They want kitchens that we have in our rooms. Latin American countries like Argentina, Chile, and Brazil, they are opening their flights in September. We have, I have personally 250 travel agencies looking for those short-term rentals. We're going to lose them. Please allow us to rent. We are complying. We are trying to stop the spread of COVID-19. I personally purchased 10,000 masks. I was delivering to my security people in 2 buildings in June to stop the spread of COVID-19. When you stop us, the only people who went able to receive it, these benefits, are the hotel operators.
Thank you, sir. Your time is up. Our next caller is Wendy Kalergis.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for your time. On behalf of the Greater Miami Beaches Hotel Association, we want to express our opposition to the proposed changes to the city's Phase 2 reopening order regarding short-term rentals. We are very concerned that short-term rentals are not compliant with COVID regulations, and the proposed changes, including occupancy limit, would hurt our ability to eliminate COVID-19, create worrisome health risks, and be disruptive to our industry as we begin the road to recovery. Now is not the time. Miami Beach is the strictest municipality, which we have grown to understand and appreciate. We're in touch with the city weekly. We are slowly on the road to recovery, and any setback, which could happen with this, would be a disaster. We really, really feel very strongly about just wait until the hotels can fully open, and then you can open up all the short-term rentals. But it's just, we're really, every day we're watching everything, and we really, really need to open back our hotels and get our employees back to work.
Thank you. The next caller is George Woolner.
Hi, this is George Wallner, and I'm president of the Carlisle Condominium on Ocean Drive. And It's interesting that I came after the last speaker, but I would say this. While our standards in terms of security, professional cleaning, enforcement of rules, no parties, only two people per bedroom in our building, and 25 security cameras throughout the building to assist in enforcement. And we exceed all the standards that are set for hotels. And while the commission considers what the last speaker said and considers all of the questions, the great questions that were asked about enforcement during the commission portion of this comment period, I would just ask you to think about how were those questions asked and answered with regard to hotels when they were opened. And so, you know, we've got to be consistent here in Miami Beach. We are all in support of eliminating COVID and setting a very high bar for getting to where we need to get to. However, it makes absolutely no sense and is crushingly unfair to treat short-term rentals that meet or exceed the standard of hotels any differently than hotels. How many people are in the rooms? They have open lobbies. People come and go. So, you know, and I spoke to 23 hotel operators in South Beach. Not one of them is aware of any proactive enforcement visits. So we need to be treated the same. If you've created a set of rules for hotels and they have standards for meeting them and they're expected to be accountable for that, apply the same rules to the short-term rental folks who are trying to survive throughout this very difficult period. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next caller is Joseph Salzberg.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Joseph Salzer with the law firm of Gray Robinson. I have the honor of representing Five Star Luxury Travel, which represents 26 unit owners in the management of their unique residences within the one hotel. And I echo a lot of the comments said before. I first want to express our gratitude to the city manager, the city commission, the mayor, your code enforcement for the jobs you guys are doing. And also for your forward thinking and loosening these restrictions for those that have good behavior. You know, our units within the one hotel, the guests that check into our units or they check into the hotel's owned or managed units have to go through the same valet parking. They have to go through the same front door. They have to go through the same temperature check. They have to go to the front desk to receive a key, whether they are renting a private condo or one managed by the hotel. They use the same amenities. They have to put a credit card down for incidentals. So our unique situation that it's one building, but it's creating, frankly, a tale of two cities. And although we completely understand the public policy concern that was first implemented with these restrictions, frankly, there have been some nefarious actors and other folks have alluded to that, that this is really serving as a competitive advantage for some and a competitive disadvantage for others, such as my client. Some have used it for protectionism, you know, absent a public policy need, just frankly, given the unique situation that these residences are within the same exact building as the hotel, the experience, the safety, the security is, they're applicable to both. There's really no discernible difference. That being said, we're very excited at this approach of you guys loosening these restrictions. We intend to fully comply with any cleaning protocols, with any reporting protocols.
Thank you, sir. Time is up. Next caller is Roxana Romero. Roxana.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm an owner of three legal STRs in Mid Beach, and I just wanted to say that I found it very, very unfair that those of us that are trying to keep up in this failing economy for our short-term rentals to be closed and the hotels to remain open. Now, I know that the hotels have big money, big pockets, big people that root for them and their lobbyists. But those of us that are doing things legally were, in effect, we were the ones being burdened by all of this. We were the ones that were being singled out. I have three studios and no more than two adults and one child fit in there. I have my studios in a condo. Everything is clean. There are no more than 20-something apartments in my condo. And I feel that, you know, we weren't represented equally as the hotels. Hotels are way more dangerous. You could put 10 people in a room. The pools are full. The bars are full. The restaurants are full. There's people in the lobby. There are people in on the elevators. And I just feel that we were singled out. And I just wanted you to know that, you know, our hotels or our condo building have cameras, everything. We're very vigilant about who comes in, who comes out. I'm one of those, the 1900 that Jimmy Morales spoke about, that has a BTR that's legal. And I just wanted to know, when will the opening, the loosening of restrictions take place, and if the 8 p.m. curfew is still in effect? And that's it. Thank you so much. And I look forward to some positive response on the part of the commission and the mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next caller is Carlos Diaz-Sampol.
Hi, it's actually Jackie Diaz-Sampol, except that I'm on the other computer. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to discuss this very important matter. I am the general manager for Castle Beach Club Condominium. We are a condo hotel, and I echo what the gentleman in the Carlisle said. We have always, as standard operating procedure, have had 24/7 security. Rove the building. We have security front desk where we receive the registrations to know who's in our building. We have enforced the using of masks, the social distancing. We have been doing everything since March. And so our owners, obviously, as consequence of this pandemic, have been allowed, then not allowed for the short-term rentals. And we also have staff, like hotels do, the association does, for all the common elements, 24/7. We watch all touch screens, elevators, we clean bathrooms every 2 hours. And we have very high standards for the hygiene protocols. We work very closely with the city always. If we have any complaints, we make sure that we address them immediately, and our security staff, which is always there, and we usually double up when there's a holiday coming. We issue violations allowed by the statute for condominiums. So we are very vigilant, usually as standard operating procedures, and now even more so. So we're actually very excited that you brought this to the table, and there's a good chance that our short-term rental owners may be able to start doing business again. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much. The next caller is Deanne Conley Graham.
Yes, hi. I have a question. A friend of mine is renting an apartment on South Beach, and she will be going out of town for 3 months and wanted to be able to sublease it or rent it to someone for the 3 months that she's away. Would that be allowed? It's in an apartment building.
I'm off the top of my head, no, that would be a short-term rental, not in a condo or in a hotel, if it's just an apartment building. So that would not be allowed.
So the fact that it's 3 months wouldn't make a difference?
Not under our order, no.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. The next caller is Rodrigo Santa Maria.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for the opportunity to speak at this forum. I'm a short-term rental owner. I have a couple of units. I'm also in the board of directors of an association, a condo association that has short-term rental units on it. And I'm really, I cannot understand why short-term rentals are being selected as the point of contagion for the coronavirus. You know, it's, for me, it's unthinkable that in the kind of condominiums that we have, we're going to have more problems than the hotel. A hotel has swimming pools, bars, everything is open, people is in contact with each other, you know, and what happened is most of the people that comes to our places specifically came because it's different than a hotel. They don't want to be in touch with too many people. So I never understood when you make this discrimination against us, you know, when you open up the hotels and keep closed short-term rentals. I expect you to go through with this measure. I understand that hotels have a lot of money in their pockets and have a lot of lobbyists, but we are a lot of people who vote in the elections, you know, and we need to be counted too. We need to be taken into account because this is really hurting us, and we are all against the coronavirus. We're going to end it. But I could understand at the beginning when you close everything, you know. Okay, it's the same rule for people doing the same thing. But this doesn't make any sense. You know, you are now closing you keep closed the short-term rentals and keep open the hotels. When the hotels are clearly, from a coronavirus standpoint, more dangerous than short-term rentals, especially the ones that we are talking about here, the ones in condominiums, and most of them, some of them have swimming
pools. Thank you, sir. Your time is up. The next caller is Luciana Cortari.
Hello, thank you for allowing me to speak to on this forum, and also thank you for considering loosening these measures. I'm owner of 3 apartments with a dual legal license short-term rental, and we've been from the beginning, you know, doing everything we can, from every kind of measure, from cleaning, sanitizing everything, and was really surprised when you know, hotels were allowed to continue but short-term rentals were banned. This has become our main income source because of everything that's happening. And of course, we're really hurting, and we need to still be able to pay maintenance, pay tax, property taxes. But at the same time, we are not being allowed to have an income from this. Again, I totally agree with others, callers that said, you know, I believe that hotels are much more riskier in order to get contagious because they have common areas like swimming pool, bars, things. Our units are not. Again, our units, in my case, there are units for only 2 people, maybe a child. So I really can't understand why we have been singled out and not being allowed to make, you know, a living from our investment, which we did when we bought this. So I really expect to get a positive response regarding this, and not to be penalized for maybe other owners that at some point they didn't took care of this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next caller is Gigi Bush.
Good afternoon, and thank you for holding this meeting to address the issues on the short-term rental agenda. I am a holder of a BTR license located in a condo hotel in Miami Beach. Our guests and renters are in the very same building as hotel rentals. It is hard to understand why our business has been singled out and is being treated differently than hotel short-term rentals. Many residents are dependent on this building, and this is causing a lack of income, which could hamper the our building. I feel that we need to be treated as equal as hotels, as we are exactly in the same building, especially when we are using the same security, the same safety measures, and serving the very same population. I feel that enough has been said. I mirror the feelings that very eloquently Mr. Salzberg and Ms. Romero and others have expressed. I feel the same way. I think that we should be allowed to rent in our building. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next caller is Alex. Alex, please state your last name and go forward, please.
Alex Steuben. And thank you very much for holding the meeting. I am president of the Casablanca Condominium Association, which has 345 unit owners, over 250 BTR licenses. I've been president of the building for 12 years. Since the beginning of short-term rentals, I have witnessed everything that went on. In our building, since COVID came in, the hotel operator actually called on code enforcement to come in because he actually didn't want us to operate. It's a conflict. And code enforcement came at least 8 times to the building. We never received one warning, one violation, one noise violation. We do not have a bar. We do not have a restaurant now. We only have a swimming pool. My concern is that the hotel only has 15 rooms in its ability to rent, while the 250 vacation rental units cannot rent. The owners, the building's ghost, like a ghost town, and the owners that are there paying for everything are not able to start to make their maintenance payments. And I'm afraid for the 30 permanent residents that live there that this building, without any income for all these owners to be able to pay their maintenance, mortgages, and insurance, we will not be able to pay the $175,000 that it takes to keep a building of that size open with everybody shut down. And I don't know what these residents would do if we cannot make it happen for these people, not to make money, but just enough to help them pay their expenses.
Thank you, sir. The next caller is Mark H. Mark, please state your last name.
Hi, my name is Mark Honigsell. Thank you for hosting this special meeting and for identifying this issue with short-term rentals. I don't need to repeat what many of the people on today said, but you know, I think George Wallner of the Carlisle, I echo his sentiments exactly. But what I wanted to add to this mix is we're looking at, I guess, an analogous situation to what was Wendy's comment, who represents hotel owners, to being just unfair and not equitable and unjust. It's a new world, analogous to Uber with the yellow medallion issue. Is short-term rentals to the hotel issue. And the city of Miami Beach made a decision a few years ago to enhance its quality control by instituting business tax receipts, BTRs, has been used. And the honest players have been licensed, insured, and have followed the regulations. It's just fair and equitable to treat BTRs that have short-term rentals designated as opposed to BTRs that have the word hotel designated in the very same buildings with the very same amenities. And I just think the commissioners have to be fair and equitable. We're taxpayers, we pay the same license fees, we pay same taxes for the City of Miami Beach and for the convention center. And therefore we need to be treated equitably. And a hotel or conversely, a short-term rental shouldn't be treated differently. We should not be lumped. We should be lumped together. We should be treated the same. It's the same client base. It's the same customer. It's the same exposure and risk to any pandemic or epidemic or any safety issue.
Thank you, sir. The next caller is Jose Bermudez. Jose?
Thank you, Mr. Clerk, and Honorable Mayor and members of the City Commission. First and foremost, I would like to enter into the record the words "under God" that were omitted during the Pledge of Allegiance. But I thank you so much for this time, and thank you for all the effort that the Commission has participated and your willingness to listen to us during this special meeting. All we're asking really is for the Commission to consider aligning the City of Miami Beach's orders with the county, which will be accepting short-term rentals where otherwise permitted that are located in structures operated in whole or in part as condominiums or hotels. We appreciate your time. We appreciate the measures that the city has taken under this national pandemic. But we just want fairness. We want equitable representation. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. The next caller is Lewis. Lewis, please state your last name.
Lewis, go ahead. Good afternoon. My name is Luis Maceda. I'm a proud owner of two units at the Casablanca condominium. We have been suffering for about 4 months. The struggles of economic situation. We strongly endorse the presentation made by our president, Mr. Staubin, and our vice president, Mrs. Bush, which I totally agree with their comments. And I hope that the commission will take the presentation made by Mr. Morales and allow us to continue our short-term rentals as we have been doing it safely and professionally throughout our history of existence of Casablanca. Thank you very much.
Hey, Ralph,
yes, sir.
From here on out, I typically figure 30, 40 minutes is enough time. So there were only 8 people when we started, I gave 2 minutes. We're gonna go to 1 minute because they keep adding on, which is fine. I wanna give everybody a chance to speak, but we have at least one commissioner that's got to leave at 3, and it may keep going as people keep adding on to speak. So let's put the clock at 1 minute now. I apologize to people. If I'd known this many people were going to speak, I would have probably just started everybody at 1 minute, because we really don't need to spend an hour or two of public testimony on this.
Thank you, sir. So the next caller with 1 minute is phone number 9261. 2621, I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir. Oh, ma'am. 2621. PJ, let's go to the next caller, Dennis Hanks.
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you for having this meeting and allowing us to speak today. My name is Dennis Hanks. I'm the executive director of the Florida Vacation Rental Management Association. We're a nonprofit association representing about 1,150 property managers around the state of Florida and 275,000 rentals. We are, as like many other speakers, are glad that you pulled this meeting together today and you are able to give some relief to these folks here. We found here in the COVID era that certainly the condo hotel type units are at a disadvantage because of the licensing structure that they're in. Something certainly that we would look at in state statute as we move forward in this year's legislative session, because we found it to be a flaw statewide, just looking to make this change. And also thanking you all for looking at the county regulations and amending yours to be very close to that.
Thank you, Mr. Hanks. The next caller is Seth Feuer.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for your time in this conversation.
I apologize. I'm between appointments, so I haven't heard the whole meeting. It's important that the short-term rentals be allowed for people with investment properties, that they're allowed by law or procedurals by that. But also, I think it's important that we not forget that there's a six-month minimum on rentals on Miami Beach, and we have a lot of very high-quality people that are willing to spend a lot of money coming in for season that could come in for 30 days or longer. And I think that short-term needs to be redefined to be 30 days, anything less than 30 days, not 6 months. Thank you very much, and please open us up.
Thank you. The next caller is Bebita Yabatut. Please unmute yourself, Bebita. Let's go to the, go ahead.
Hello. Hi. Ooh,
go on. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, Rafael. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. Go ahead.
Thank you for the commissioners to give us a chance to speak out. I'm not going to repeat what everyone else says. I'm agreeing with Fernando Ortalaza, Alex Dubent, Joseph, Roxana, and Jessica. I believe that you guys really need to consider us. All of these owners are losing their properties. We're all paying taxes, HOAs. And we follow all the rules even better than the hotels are doing in Miami Beach. So our main concern is keeping our guests safe, but we'll also be able to rent out. Otherwise, all these property owners will be losing at the end, and it's going to be a major problem. And I would really thank them if they could really take their time to give us a hand here to open up soon.
Thank you so much. The next caller is a representative of the Alexander Hotel. Please state your name. Alexander Hotel.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I just want some clarification from the commissioners who's going to take the burden on of managing these short-term rentals where there is no registration of them and there is no on-site management.
Thank you, sir. The next caller is Ken Koppel.
I have a question with respect to enforcement. I'm not concerned about the good operators. I'm concerned about the not good operators. In the event of a violation in a building with multiple units and where there might be a pattern of such violations, whose BTR gets lifted? Is it the individual or is it for the entire building itself? And secondly, what can cause a BTR to be listed? Is it solely occupancy violation or noise or other behavioral violations? Thank you.
Thank you. We'll answer those questions afterwards. The next caller and last caller is Patricia. Patricia, please state your name, last name. Patricia, you're live and you're the last caller.
Hello, can you hear me?
Go ahead, Patricia.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, sorry, I cannot hear myself. But anyways, I want to thank everybody for this beautiful meeting. Thanks, the mayor, the commissioner, Rafael, all of you guys are doing a great job. Our, you know, primary objective here is to keep Miami Beach safe, top one destination in the world. But we are all talking as investors and paying taxes. And I don't really think that this is fair. I think that the hotels are considered a much harmful spread for the COVID than what we are doing here. So I really thank you for reconsidering and reopening short-term rentals. Thank you.
Thank you, Patricia. That was the last caller on this subject. So, Mayor.
Thank you. Thank you all for your participation. I have a couple quick questions. I'm going to go to my colleagues. So, Jimmy, you know, one of the things I was, as I listened to some of the callers, obviously the problem always is we end up hearing from really pretty responsible folks and maybe not folks who might not be as responsible. The logic that the county used was that a hotel seems to have some apparatus around it that allows it to govern and control the area so they can see who's coming in, out. They, you know who to go to if there's an issue with cleaning and all these other things. And maybe you don't have that in some of the condos. Maybe some of the condo hotels might, although I don't know that. So I guess the first question is, what kind of enforcement could you really expect? If there's a place that doesn't have a front desk, for instance, or a meaningful one where it's one of the keys that you get out of a lockbox or something like that. I mean, I guess my question is, do you feel like you have the enforcement for those kinds of places? Do you want to be able to, if some of the callers actually said, we have all these accoutrements just like a hotel. Well, do you want to, what happens if a building has a couple problems? Do you want to be able to say that this address is problematic after a second violation, whether it's from one unit owner or two, and therefore you want to, during the emergency order, prevent that building from having short-term rentals? Can you think of things you might want to do that will give us some confidence that you're going to be able to enforce this, at least during the executive order? Obviously, at other times, these are legal short-term rentals.
If the I think there were a couple of questions. See, one is, what happens to a building that doesn't have a front desk or something like that? The county order doesn't require it. We had not in the past, and our own code required that short-term rentals in condo buildings or elsewhere have a separate desk. So there, the mechanism will be no different than, I guess, it would be in an apartment building or some other places, is it's other people complaining when problems occur in those buildings. And in this case, obviously, we would have to do, as part of our outreach, letting folks know that these are the new rules. And if there are more than 10 people, more than four people or six people in the unit, that they need to report that. The second question, I think, is what happens if a building that, I hope I'm getting it right, if there's a building that, despite having a front desk and other amenities.
Than the rest of the county in the volume of people that come here. So I'm wondering if you have a building where it does seem like there's repeated violations, whether it's from one unit owner or multiple, that would suggest that maybe that building is not doing what seemed to be what a lot of the speakers were saying they are capable of doing, which is controlling their environment. So I'm asking you if you have a situation, if we're not keeps getting calls to a particular building, maybe not even from the same unit, at some point, do you want to be able to, and by the way, I leave it up to you. You can write the executive order the way you seem fit. You're our manager. But I understand why you might want to do that, so that after a second violation, you say to the building, we're not going to allow short-term rentals anymore, because your representation that you're going to control all this is just not happening.
I hadn't thought about that issue. I mean, I guess if there is a building, as we heard some of the speakers say, where they've got 20 or 30 units and we start getting violations from 8, 9, 10 different units. I mean, I guess it could get to a point where we prohibit that in that building altogether. I know one of the challenges is that, you could have 30 different owners of 30 different units, and you want to punish the bad behavior, not necessarily, but not punish those who haven't done anything wrong. I don't know. I mean, I guess the question, though, in terms of shutting down the building, if they're in a condo building, there are other condos on that building. You're not shutting them down. Or if they're in a hotel, you're not shutting down the hotel. I mean, I guess that would be an option. But we could shut down all short-term rentals in a building that was having such bad behavior. I'm hoping, though, that as you shut down one by one, the message would hopefully get to the others that there's a problem there that needs to be addressed. And if it wasn't a building that had at least a desk or something, we could maybe work with them a little more carefully about that. I mean, that's a big tool. That's sort of a hammer as opposed to maybe a scalpel. But it might be something we have to consider if it gets to that point. I don't think, and maybe Herndon, have we had situations where sort of a whole building is out of control or anything like that? Or is it normally just a few bad apples?
No, Jimmy, we have not. And the way the ordinances are written, we act against individual owners, individual business tax receipts, BTRs. The only time that we've seen where maybe individual licenses can be restricted or at least postponed for an individual unit or building, I should say, is if there's some type of, let's say, fire code violation that impacts the entire building, then, of course, any BTRs, whether it be for commercial first floor use or short-term rentals, would be restricted until those violations are addressed. But other than that, no, it's individual business tax receipts that we go against.
But my question then is, have you had buildings that have repeat offenders or multiple offenders? In other words, where you keep going to the same building with more regularity than you might be. I'm sure a lot of the people who spoke today, you don't know, and hopefully you don't visit very often. But are there some buildings that regularly have problem renters in them, I guess, for want of a better word?
And yeah, across town, you know, we do have buildings that flare up from time to time. But as we said in the beginning, you know, a bad transient renter is a bad transient renter, wherever they may be found, whether it's a hotel unit, a short-term rental. I can't say it's any one building consistently all the time.
Okay, let's go to my colleagues. Let's go with the vice mayor has his hand up.
Thank you, Mayor. And I'm today going to support the administration's recommendation to allow short-term rentals as the manager has described. I appreciate that the administration is striking the right balance. I appreciate the collaborative nature of bringing this forward. These folks have made investments, and I think we heard from a lot of them, and the word fairness does stick with me. I think this is fair. These folks also are operating legally. They've gone through the process. They've taken all the steps that we prescribed, and in this pandemic and economic crisis are asking us to treat them fairly. My final comment in support of this would be for those who have concerns, and I think legitimate concerns and questions. I believe the way the administration is describing the enforcement bar is actually higher, because under a single violation, people could lose their BTR. If there ever was a time to expect good behavior and expect people to do the right thing, this would be that time. So I will be supporting the administration's recommendation. That's my guidance back to the manager.
Okay, Jimmy, I don't know that we're taking a vote. You're taking the temperature. Is that how do you want to? I just want to know how precise my colleagues need to be in their.
Legally, you don't have to take a vote because obviously it's within my power. But I just wanted to get a sense, certainly at a minimum, from the body.
And I don't mind giving the public a chance to weigh in. All right, Commissioner Richardson.
Thank you, Mayor. Appreciate that. Appreciate all the input from the public as well. I want to be brief because I know we have to move on to some other issues, and we're not voting. So, Jimmy, I just want to give you my input. I support your recommendation with a couple of caveats that I'd like to add. I heard a couple of the callers tell me that they have a limit in their building, an occupancy limit of four people, or in one case, two people per unit. So, what I would suggest to you is that you make your ruling that the occupancy would be limited to the establishment if there is to the rule of the establishment if it already exists, and if it does not, then defer to your occupancy limit of four plus additional two if it's family members, because I would not want you to come out and say up to six people if it's and have that in excess of an establishment that already has a limit of four, and then have people arguing that the establishment limit is unethical or illegal. So that would be my recommendation, so you don't disturb their limitations. And then the other thing I just ask you to look at is, you know, and we've covered this really, is be mindful and watch the concern on condo building. My biggest concern is on condo buildings where there is no front desk, where there is no regular security. I know a person mentioned there were 20 units in the building. These are the ones that I worry about, not from a health perspective, but where we've had problems is people packing into units really in excess. And if there's no on-site security and there's no on-site reception desk, that sort of thing, those are the ones that, in my view, are most at risk for abusing the rule. So I would say that if you find those, be strict and put them out of business, you know. And I don't think you can do the whole building. I don't think that's fair to the other owners. But if somebody is not going to play by the rules, we shouldn't fool around and give them one, two, three chances, all that stuff. Just shut them down and let's keep the good business operators in business, because that's what we should be doing. So that's my input. Thank you very much.
Commissioner Miner.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I'm supportive, Jimmy. I appreciate the recommendation. I think it strikes the right balance here. Obviously, hotels are open. Miami-Dade County now in its amended order a couple of weeks ago. Short-term rentals are open. This is a legal business, but I think your enforcement protocols are good, that it'll punish the bad actors, but allow, I think, which by and large, most of the actors are working in good faith and operating not only legally, but in the manner that we'd like them to act, and those will continue to be able to operate and earn a living in the way they anticipated, but punishing the bad actors as you described. So I appreciate it, and I think it's a good balance.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Miner. Commissioner Richardson, do you have more questions?
I did it again. I did it again. Thank
all
you.
Right. So I don't, nobody else is, Commissioner Ariel, you go ahead.
Yeah, I'm supportive. So I'll not belabor the point. I'm supportive of.
Okay, Jimmy, I think you've got a good temperature. Why don't you, so everybody listening know, give them a sense of what you intend to do and when that'll come into effect.
Yeah, I want to give us a few days of being able to do some outreach and education. And probably have it, you know, in place by, you know, my guess is the weekend or something. That would be the thought.
So to the many people listening, you sort of have a sense of what it is that the manager is going to be doing. But until the order is issued, it's not legal to do. But he expects it to be by the weekend.
Yeah, that will give us a couple of days to, you know, do some of the outreach, let Hernan unleash his folks and go to the buildings and make sure that the folks know what the rules are.
Ricky,
it's going to take them a couple of days. I'm sure to.
Okay.
All right. You want to move on to the next issue?
Yeah, let's move on to the school issue you raised.
All right. Obviously, another development we've had is that the superintendent of schools, Alberto Carvalho, announced that they're going to start the school year this year, first a little delayed on August 31st as they're getting ready. And that they would be remote at least through September. They have, aspirationally, they'd like to start having kids come back October 5th, but my guess is it'll go beyond September would be my prediction, but at least certainly for the first month, they're planning on doing it remotely. Obviously, one of the challenges that we always talk about when schools close is the impact on the workforce who have school-aged children. And in some of the conversations we've seen, actually a couple of nonprofits, but also a couple of cities, Miami Springs is one that we know, are contemplating that to try to help working class parents, I mean, working parents with school-aged children, is to provide an alternative space where they could drop off the school-aged kids to do their, I guess, remote classrooms. But instead of doing it from their, obviously, their bedroom at home, to do it from some public facility and municipal facility with some level of, obviously, supervision while they're doing that. And I know a couple of cities are looking at that. I know, I think somebody mentioned the JCC may even been doing it for a charge. So I had, you know, I reached out to our parks department just to get a sense, because essentially, they would be the logical, you know, they do the after-school programs usually and things like that. They express some concern that while and while they'll obviously do whatever we ask them to do, you know, they're prepared always. Their concern is that to some degree that, you know, our summer camp program was essentially an effort to try to provide a safe alternative, not nine kids with one counselor and indoor and outdoor and whatnot. And as we saw, despite our, you know, well-intentioned efforts, we ultimately closed that down because we did have exposures and positive testing. And it sort of does raise the question, if it's not safe for the kids to go back to the classroom at the school, which is built for this kind of activity, is it necessarily safe for us to, or any city, to create essentially an alternative school type setting, you know, in the city, in a city facility that isn't necessarily even built for that. Two, even if we wanted to do it, obviously our capacity is more limited. This summer we had a limited capacity for summer camp, and based on what the park staff told me, with the kind of distancing you'd need to sort of meet the school standards, you're talking, you know, maybe 75 to 100 kids max anyway we would be able to handle, meaning probably most of our school age children who might qualify would not be able to participate. And also concerns about the extent to which, you know, our Wi-Fi could suddenly handle the capacity of all these kids all at once being online in our parks. They're not designed to sort of do that all day long. And we would have probably connectivity issues. So our recommendation, you know, would be not to do that. I think if somebody wants to do it, the schools could do that. I mean, obviously they've got the buildings, they've got the Wi-Fi capacity, they've got personnel that are frankly available. But for whatever reason, they've made a decision that's not safe for either their faculty or their students to be in the classroom. And I'm just query whether they're any more safe in our, you know, at Scott Rakow or at the North Shore Youth Center or at Flamingo Park in one of our buildings. I'm not so sure. And so our recommendation would be not to go down that path, but I wanted, because I know some cities are going to be doing it and our residents may express some interest or hear that somebody else is doing it, I wanted to sort of bring that before you, because obviously before the next time we meet is the school year will start virtually.
Okay, thank you. Anybody want to? I don't see anyone with their hand up. So with that, I'm going to move to the next item on the agenda. Minor.
Yeah. Thank you, Jimmy. Just a quick.
Should have spoke faster. I was my fault.
Sorry, should be quick. I guess I had a number of questions, but really I'll ask one, I think, if it comes down to, if you think you're going to have Wi-Fi connectivity issues, I mean, it sounds like it could potentially be a disaster. We'd be setting something up and the kids wouldn't even be able to learn. If you think that's questionable, I mean, that kind of ends the query to me.
You know, we, right now in our parks, you know, our parks are sort of like hotspots that the community can use. And a lot of people do use them. So, our concern is that if all of a sudden, in addition to that, you had, you know, kids are on six, seven hours a day, there would be connectivity issues, and that either turn it off for the rest of the community, or the kids are going to have intermittent service. So it's, again, it's not, the schools have a very dedicated system. We don't necessarily have that. And so that's not to say that if you gave us a green light, we wouldn't try to figure out a way to get it done. But that would be something we're not geared up to do right now, and we would be concerned. You know, technology issues are always the first time you're trying to do something. We want to make sure we would be able to deliver what they would need from a Wi-Fi perspective. And right now, we'd probably have to make some investment or some activity to do that to see if it could work.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Jimmy. Let's move to the CARES Act.
All right. Last, I brought up is, and we've had conversations before, the county received about $474 million in CARES Act funding. And over the last number of weeks, there have been discussions between the cities and the county about how much money the county was prepared to share with the cities, under what circumstances, et cetera. The county commission met at the end of July or maybe even the beginning of August already. I forget what the exact date. And they actually voted to set aside $100 million in sort of two tranches, $75 million to reimburse cities for CARES Act eligible projects, and for the local match of FEMA eligible expenditures. That local match is at 12.5%. And then it created another pot of money, $25 million for new proposals and new funding and whatnot. So one of the things that the regulations issued by the Treasury Department in connection with the CARES Act is that if a recipient of CARES money is going to do a sub-grant which in this case, this would be the county doing a subgrant, that it requires an agreement. The county is requiring a local agreement. I know Jason Jacobson is on from the city attorney's office who reviewed it. They had circulated a couple weeks ago, two, 3 weeks ago, a first draft of that document. Jason provided commentary, legal commentary, as well as some staff comment. And not just to the benefit of the city, but to the benefit of actually all other cities, the county incorporated a lot of those changes and recirculated in the latest draft of that document. And the reason I wanted to bring this today is that there's a real possibility that the county will be distributing that money before the end of this month. The $75 million was based on the various spreadsheets that were submitted by all the cities. We've requested we have had $19 million of expenditures through July 24th that we submitted. About $10 million of those are FEMA eligible. So from that, we'd be looking at about $1.25 million. And then another $8.5 to $9 million are not FEMA eligible, but they're CARES Act eligible, we believe. And that would actually be potentially 100%, depending on how much money has been asked for. The county had indicated that the $75 million represented what they thought was, in fact, what all the cities had requested in the combined CARES Act eligible and local match FEMA. So we could be looking almost as much as $10 million that could come our way potentially by the end of this month. And so I certainly didn't want, and the county is requiring in the document, I think Jason can verify, that the agreement had been approved by the legislative body. So I wanted to bring this for your vote and approval. Jason, I don't know if you want to describe any issue, any items in the contract that you think are relevant, but essentially it's just setting forth the conditions under which we submit, the regulations applicable to us, it's an agreement whereby we get money, hopefully, we don't give. Jason, I don't know if you want to add anything.
Jimmy, I think you hit it right on the head. It basically outlines the responsibilities that the city would otherwise have to comply with under the federal regulations, and it just puts it into the local, interlocal agreement. I agree with everything you said.
Okay, Commissioner Richardson.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I just had a couple of questions, maybe best for Jason, if you reviewed the document. So, I guess we gave comments back to the county. So is this agreement a county, the agreement is a county document that they're asking us to execute? And will it be the same agreement for all local governments, or are they going to be specific to governments? And maybe Jason can answer that.
The idea is that this is going to be a uniform interlocal agreement distributed throughout the county to the municipalities and the local governments. I was just able to get in contact with the county attorney who was handling the matter, and I was able to give my comments early on and interject before we heard from the masses.
And it's a uniform document, right?
Certainly.
Okay. And I haven't read all 44 pages of it because I'm relying on you to do that. Thank you. Can you tell me if there are any payback provisions within the agreement that were in any case in which if we receive funds, we would have to return those funds to the county?
Only to the extent the funds are deemed to not be eligible under the CARES Act.
So there's an audit provision in the agreement, and are we anticipating an audit possibly down the road?
Yes.
Okay. So having said that, and Jimmy, are we going to be voting on this?
Yeah, the agreement requires that the legislative body approves the document, approves, okay, or authorizes the administration to enter into the agreement.
Okay. I have no problem entering into the agreement. I don't think we should spend the money. I think we've already spent the money, right? Based on what I've heard, and I believe this is a significant amount, and we're going into our budget cycle in the last vote in September, and I wouldn't want us to count on this money as part of that budget, given that it's not finalized yet. So maybe before September, we can think about whether or not I need to bring something to propose to my colleagues about putting it into reserves or holding it until the final audit or whatever. But I have no problem with that, and I'll move the item if nobody else has any other questions.
I'll second the motion.
Oh, we got Commissioner Gangora. It's been moved and seconded. Commissioner Gangora.
Yes. No, I'm going to vote in favor of the item. And I assume that the administration will come back to us as well with recommendations on what we do with the money. I haven't had a chance to review very carefully what this sum of money is for. Is some or part of it with regard to employees and covering payroll?
The CARES Act dollars are dollars spent in response to the pandemic. So it is not money that can be used to make up lost revenue or things like that, but it does cover, for example, when we had employees who were working on social distancing and enforcement in parks, on beaches, things like that, the special COVID units that were created in police and fire. So some of it is payroll related, but it had to be in connection with COVID response. It couldn't be stuff that had already been budgeted or things like that. It's also all the PPE, a lot of that kind of stuff, food distribution, things like that, anything that was response to COVID and was not already otherwise in our budget.
Okay, so we wouldn't be able to use any of this money to bring back employees that we furloughed during the pandemic?
Well, how you use it is another story. Because I think, as Commissioner Richard said, we used it, we spent our own money properly, obviously. We are now submitting this to the county and obviously FEMA and the state for the other 87.5% of the FEMA eligible stuff for reimbursement. Once we get that reimbursement money, then how we use it is up to you all. You know, we could use it for employees. We could use it for reserve. We could, because we already spent it in a proper way. It's just how we're just getting that money back, and how you use it is then a budgetary question for you all.
Okay, so we likely will have money in some amount coming back that we can consider. Yes. Will we know in September when we're voting in the budget the likelihood of receiving this money or how much of it we'll have?
No, the county has indicated that you know, we turned in our spreadsheet. I think every city did that. I think it was two Mondays ago or something. They had to have that, and then they're working through the interlocal. That they've got the money. It's sitting there because they received all $474 million and they've set aside $75 million. And so they were hoping to try to get those dollars out, you know, by the end of this month. So we could very well have it in time for our two budget hearings and to be discussed and allocated, spent, reserved, whatever you want to do.
Okay, because that's a big deal. That's going to change the financial picture quite a bit dramatically with the budget. What about the people that were working in the resource center, all of those employees that were transferred at that time that were answering calls? Is that money that's included in here?
Yeah, I believe those, the costs of the resource center, including wages, are part of it. I've got the whole spreadsheet right here, and I'm trying to go through it with my
glasses. Manager?
Oh,
Mr. Manager?
Yes, Marcia? Okay.
Yes, so the resource center.
Happy birthday.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. The resource center was included in here. Not only the staff and the salaries associated with that staff, but the additional phone lines that were required to put up the resource center, and any and all of the PPE that was required for the employees that are participating. So yes, Commissioner Gongora, it was included in there.
Okay, because to me this is a dramatic difference. We kind of heard a very bleak picture of our financial health as we went through the budget hearing, but it now appears that we're getting most of that money back. So a lot of the decisions that we made in July leading up to that in the budget workshops were based upon those projections. Now there's this whole pot of money coming in. So I think it's important that the administration adequately brief us before September, and that you all make projections and suggestions about what we do with this amount of money, and also let us know if all of these employees that we were cutting, whether we in fact need to make those cuts in light of this, in light of this money. And happy birthday, Marcia, since I see all the balloons behind you.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner.
No, we will obviously have recommendations. We will give you how this updates our financial situation. It does, you know, obviously, the revenue issues are still what they are, but this obviously, what happened is, as you know, we were hoping to get Congress to do a CARES Act that would give money directly to municipalities. That didn't happen, but fortunately, the county has agreed to share some of its money, so it helps. It doesn't plug all the holes, but it certainly helps.
We don't know how much we're getting.
Didn't we cut the resource center significantly because we were running out of money?
I think so.
At some point, some of the individuals there were also furloughed who had been assigned to the resource center, and I think we have downsized it. I'm not sure it has the same demand it had at the beginning when we had all the PPP and all that stuff going on. I don't know what the current size is, but we did downsize it for sure. And some of the people who had been assigned there, I think some of them have been furloughed since.
Okay, well, I think I would like to know, and I assume my colleagues would like to know, because I assume that was a financial decision, based on this money coming in, whether that would still be the recommendation. I'm very interested. The budget is really one of our most important roles as city commissioners and legislators. Not something for the finance committee. It's something for the seven of us. So I want to make sure that I'm adequately briefed and that we set aside significant times as we're discussing the budget to figure out what we're going to do with this additional windfall of money. But I support the motion for today. I want us to get the money, and then I want to figure out what to do with it.
Yeah. Let's count our, we'll count our chickens when we get them. Well, for sure.
Yes.
Thank you, Commissioner Richardson.
I just want to add, Jimmy, when you're briefing us, I assume you're going to give us some sort of memo after we get the money. Just make clear to us what money we have received versus what money we believe we're due, because as you correctly stated, a piece of this money is going to come through the federal pipeline, and the balance is here. So I think that we're anticipating that we're going to be able to get this local money from the county almost immediately, perhaps in the next 30 days. But the balance of what we believe we're entitled to, we might have to wait maybe 1 or 2 years for. So just split that out so that we'll know how much we're dealing with in terms of actual cash flow. Okay?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you. Thanks. Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you, Commissioner. The only thing I will show it, first of all, it's been moved and seconded, show it approved without objection. The only thing I'd add just for the community at large is a lot of the money our city has spent, a good amount of it, is not simply for our residents, but because we tend to also be a center of attraction for the region or more. So a lot of that money was spent not just for our residents, but for protection of our county and other folks that come here and leave here. So it's a good amount, but it's also an amount that we have to spend because we simply can't ignore the fact that we're an attraction for people to come and visit. I don't have anything else except to congratulate Samantha in my office on the birth of little Dominic. A few days ago, it was a big deal. I don't want to, I didn't do that to trump Marcia's birthday today, but I did feel like we have to at least acknowledge Samantha Leone, who's been working diligently this last 9 months, has also been carrying a child, which is now a healthy and happy little kid. So with that, anything else for the good of the order? Thank you all. Thank you, Jimmy, for asking us to have a meeting. Bye-bye.